I'm Christopher Lydon. In an open source podcast with the novelist Mary Gordon on the matter of Pope Francis. She is a steady light among American writers labeled Catholic. It turns out she's got strong, mixed emotions about this Pope, who loves the same steamy Anna Magnani movies that the Catholic Church used to ban when Mary Gordon and I were growing up. I'm asking not just about the man, Pope Francis, but about us, and how to understand the global stirring of interest in a very different figure of Christian spirit in the world.
I don't understand it yet. When I first read the article that he wrote in the Jesuit magazine, I literally burst into tears. And what that signaled to me was how sad I had been for so long, that is, since 1978, since the reign of John Paul II. And it was as if what I had hoped for the church, which I had given up hope on, suddenly seemed possible again. But hope is a frightening thing, particularly when, you know, you're not 18 and a lot of things that you had hoped for, a lot of people that you had believed in, turned out to have been disappointing. That's one of the things that's hard to deal with as you age. And so what he says seems so hopeful to me that I'm almost afraid to believe it.
Remind me of that magazine article. What was it about? And how long ago did you take notice?
It was in the fall. It was the article that was in the Jesuit magazine in which he said, you know, stop obsessing about abortion and homosexuality, and that I'm a healer, this is a war zone. Particularly what made me happy was that he loved Anna Magnani.
Interesting.
And his favorite movie was La Strada.
Yes, fascinating.
I said, okay, you know, this is a good guy. And I felt like saying to him, Pope, do you understand, though, that Anna Magnani was on the condemned list? We weren't allowed to watch her. So all of it was so hopeful. You know, what I had been saying, could we get off the dime of sexual obsession? And he was saying it. And it just seemed so wonderful, and it opened up so many things that it kind of, it made me feel a little hysterically giddy, and then I got scared. You know, he can't change everything in a minute, and he's got a very entrenched bureaucracy. I don't know if he'll be able to change it. I'm kind of waiting to give him my heart 100% until February. He's going to put in, I don't know whether it's 9 or 11 cardinals, some large number. And I think that will tell us a lot, because that's not a charm offensive. That's going to really prove where his values are. And so I want him to be what I hope he is so much that it almost scares me.
There are other issues, too, including the economic issues, talking back to capitalism, also the inclusion issues, the questions of kind of universal salvation. I love that analogy of the medical station on a battlefield. We're here to help. We're here to deal with wounds, not to ask you, you know, intimate personal questions that you wouldn't to a patient in distress. But also just the sense of the problem is life. The problem is a damaging experience that we're all going through together. But spell out some of those other things that gave you hope.
Well, I have, you know, I hate being fair to people that I can't stand. Not in my nature, but I have to be fair to John Paul II and even Benedict. They were pretty good at talking back to unbridled capitalism. They weren't bad about that. What they were bad about was anything having to do with what we used to call faith and morals. And what has changed with Francis is the tone. And as a writer, obviously, tone is not nothing. Tone is tremendously important. So that rigid, punitive tone that John Paul II and Benedict had, Francis doesn't have it. If only that has changed, that's wonderful, and that gives me a lot of hope. Whether there's more than that and what it will result in, I don't know, and I think we'd be wrong to think that suddenly, you know, divorced Catholics were going to be able to receive communion in a minute. They're not. He's also pretty firm about that there will be no woman priests. I don't think that inclusion of women in the full ministry is his long suit. You know, I'm not unrealistic. It's not going to happen in my lifetime. I get why he can't do it. there's part of me that wants to say wait and see, and there's part of me that wants to fall in love and have hope again, because the way that John Paul and Benedict led the church was nothing I wanted to follow. And it's interesting. I feel like John Paul II is like Reagan. He did a tremendous amount of damage, but he was very photogenic, and so people aren't mad at him. John Paul II really did an enormous amount of damage inside the church. He was good in the larger world. He was terrible for the church.
Funny you should mention politicians. I mean, I see, in some measure, Pope Francis filling sort of the universal hero gap. Nelson Mandela is dead. Barack Obama has disappointed so many people as the sort of head visionary, intergalactic leader. Is that a way to see Pope Francis or not?
Well, I think let's remember the Barack Obama analogy. People are disappointed in Barack Obama because they fantasize that he could do something that he could never do. And they're going to be disappointed in Francis for the same reason. And Nelson Mandela is probably somewhere in the middle because he actually didn't have a lot of direct political power. The Pope does. And so the Mandela analogy doesn't quite work, except that people want it to. But Mandela didn't have to make the tough decisions about governing, and the Pope does. So let's see.
Mary Gordon, you mentioned that John Paul II and Benedict talked back to, you know, ideological capitalism. But Pope Francis has done something more. I mean, he has restored, in a certain way, liberation theology, the preferential option for the poor. One of the first things he did, I read from Harvey Cox, was invite Father Gutierrez to come and talk with him, have breakfast with him immediately after he was sworn in as Pope. He is acting much more boldly, it seems to me, than any pope in our time on issues of economic justice, on social fairness.
You know, it's a little late in the day for him to be coming to the aid of liberation theology when he was pretty bad in Argentina about it. I think that Jim Carroll's point is in his New Yorker article is really good, that he's repenting. What impresses me is I think he is somebody that's capable of change. I think he does see that he made mistakes. But, you know, in years when it counted, he wasn't very courageous about the preferential option for the poor, nor was he very courageous about standing up to the junta. I want to believe that he can change. I want to believe that he's grown. Let's see what happens. Let's see if he lifts some of the bans on the theologians who've been silenced. Let's see. I hope, but I don't think the evidence is all in, and I do think it will be very bad for people if they fantasize about heroic measures that are not going to be able to happen. I think that's really great when you're a teenager and you like movie stars, but if you want to really live a life, maybe we have to be a little bit more realistic, not give up hope, not say it's not possible. But I just want to wait a little bit before I get my heart broken again.
Leaving Pope Francis aside for the moment, what do you make of us in this whole story? An incredible excitement around this figure. Help us understand what seems to me a very broad public appetite for a man of spirit. There's adulation in it, maybe excessive, but there's belief. There's hype, yes, there's hunger. What's going on here among us?
Well, I think it's got to be a good thing. It seems to me there are two real meta-narratives in the world. And it's the narrative, one is the narrative of unbridled capitalism, and the other is the narrative of murderous fundamentalism. And people are spiritually exhausted by that. And so a man who says, you know, one of the great things that he's saying is, who am I to judge? Just that openness and generosity, the fact that there's still a hunger for that, that in itself is enormously hopeful. And I would hate to see that dashed and disappointed and killed.
What else are we hungering for? And I say we, the species.
I think that one of the things that we're most hungering for is hope, because it's a pretty scary world. And one of the things that I like about the Pope is people think that they can only have hope if they have certainty. And he is offering hope that's a little bit open-ended and a little bit unsure. And so it's a hope for grown-ups. And I think hope for grown-ups is what we're hungering for.
What's the fear, Mary Gordon? You know, beyond the specifics of the bishops he chooses, what is the reservation here in your heart?
The fear in my heart is that he will not be able to stand up to the entrenched bureaucracy. The fear is that, I'm not sure, sometimes he seems to be talking out of both sides of his mouth. That makes me a little bit nervous. Just the fact, for example, that he's canonizing both John the 23rd and John Paul II, that he's supporting the canonization of both Oscar Romero and the head of Opus Dei, that makes me nervous. You can't both say that Oscar Romero and Opus Dei are okay. They can't both be. They just can't be. So what makes me nervous is that, is he just saying what he thinks people want to hear, and that when the tough decisions come, he'll pedal back to a safe position which will be supported by the bureaucracy. That's my anxiety.
Jim Carroll made the point in The New Yorker that his impression is that Pope Francis is a conservative on issues like priestly marriage or ordaining women, and maybe on gay marriage and all sorts of those other sexual issues that he's kind of put aside, but that at the same time he's a radical, that he approaches people, maybe even the world and his job, more nearly in the spirit of Jesus than any pope I can remember. Is it possible that he is a conservative man, at the same time a liberated, Christ-like, generous Franciscan spirit in the world?
Well, but what does it mean to be a conservative? So it means that you are preventing certain things from happening. And what about the suffering that those preventions cause? How does that fit in with openness and a desire? Because you're actually saying no. So to women who feel that they're called to the priesthood, you're saying no. That's causing them sorrow. You are excluding people. So you can't pretend that he's completely open and then just erase the people who his conservatism excludes. I don't expect him to be perfect, but I think that when you say he's a conservative, that's not value-free, and it has implications.
I guess I was just thinking of a conservative as a person who's deeply burdened by a tradition and by a bureaucracy and a history, by precedent, by habits.
Yeah, but there are some things he can get rid of and some things that he can't. And what I'm saying is the things that he wants to hold on to, they have implications and they cause suffering too. I don't expect him. I don't even want him to say everything's fine, you know, handy dandy. But I think we have to not forget the people who are excluded by his conservatism, and a lot of them are women.
Speaking of gender, a Buddhist woman, a significant writer, interesting person turned out, made an observation to me that Pope Francis has taken on the persona in certain ways of the women in the church, and she was thinking of the Sisters of Loreto. She's not a Catholic or a Christian, but I thought it was fascinating that he takes on, in the washing of feet and the whole idea of being a medic on a battlefield, he's taking on a role that is performed beautifully, heroically by thousands and thousands of...
Except that he gets to say Mass, and they don't.
That's true. But I want to see him as taking on a kind of some sort of women's role and enjoying it.
I think that that's a little too simple for me.
I should say embracing it.
That's too essentialist for me. That says that nurturing is for women. Nurturing is for women a lot of times because men refuse to do it. And I don't think you can let the power thing go. One of the things that women don't have is power. It's kind of like guys, you know, like when a guy changes a diaper and he gets the Congressional Medal of Honor. You know, you have to really follow the implications of that. I'm not saying that what he's doing tonally isn't wonderful. It's merciful. It's open. it's certainly in the right direction. I don't want to be fantastical about him, and I don't want to elide the contradictions. And I don't want people to think he's something that he's not, because I don't think he wants us to think he's something that he's not.
Mary Gordon, you've written a lot about this, your own formation in a family with a Jewish father and a Catholic mother, and you're finding your way culturally and religiously in the Catholic tradition. Just remind me of sort of the consciousness today that with which you sort of come to all these observations, independent but Catholic too, of the new Pope.
I guess that I've kind of hung in when it was really hard for me to hang in, because I think that there are things that the Church does that the world would not be better off without. I think that it has a combination of the ethical, the aesthetic, and the mystical at its best that is really invaluable, and that it had been perverted by its sexual phobias. He's certainly moving us in the right direction. I'm a feminist. And so, you know, the thing that's always at the center of my eye that I can never push to the side is, what's he saying about women? What's he doing for women? I don't expect him to be perfect. I don't expect him to even be a feminist. But I have to keep reminding people, you know, when you're all so starry-eyed about him, who's being denied? And perhaps politically he has to do it. But I would like him to say, you know, women can't be ordained right now. This is very sad. Not, you know, the door is closed, which is what he said. It was interesting that that diction was the most closed of any diction he's used. So that was interesting to me, that he said the door is closed. It's not happening. We ain't talking about this. So interestingly, what's the one thing he won't talk about? Giving full power to women. He has to be reminded of who he's excluding. And maybe he'll listen.
Mary Gordon, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to read you, and a great privilege to talk with you.
Wonderful to talk to you, Chris.